So you're a big Sharks fan now?
No, I'm not.
Is there more?
No.
Are you going to be okay?
Yeah.
So the Canucks lost?
Yes.
Moving on.
Try not to think about it.
Hello and welcome to episode 122 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Dubing in Germany, and with me as always is
Adam, Vancouver.
Vancouver, Canada. Home of the Canucks, yeah. Adam.
Home of the Canucks.
All right, yeah. That's enough said then.
All right.
Moving on. We're not going to leave, or we won't get into that with the Canucks.
No, let's leave hockey aside for now.
I think we'd all prefer that. Amazon, that's a good thing.
Right. Are we millionaires yet? Zillionaires.
We are 20 heirs. Yeah. Wait, does that mean that means multiple 20s, right?
I don't know.
Okay, yeah, then I no. No, I'm just joking. We're doing pretty. It's doing well. I'm very encouraged and inspired by the results thus far.
Wow.
So
I know. I've had multiple family members make purchases.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
All adding in. That's how it works. So what we're saying is, if you're going to buy something on Amazon already, simply click through our site and find the link on the right hand side. And I should note, though, that the way it's set up now, and I'm working on fixing this, and when I say working, I mean just staring at the blank screen, wondering if it'll fix itself.
Right.
If you're on an iPad or an iPod or an iPhone or probably some other device, because there's a few others.
Right.
The way the mobile site renders it, those links show up at the bottom of the page.
Okay.
So I've had some people ask about that, actually, so I did not know, but now I do. I'll see if we can figure out a better way to do that. Probably not. I'm not that smart. But for now, they're at the bottom. So if you are going to click through our site, that helps us out, helps us keep the podcast going. So much appreciated to the people who've already done it. And P.S., tell your friends.
Great.
So there you go. Update on the baseball career.
Yes. Because we were all waiting for that.
Yeah, people were waiting.
Like you were going to go to the show last time we talked.
It's not really the show. I don't want to give that impression. It's a very good league, but it's not the show.
Okay.
It would.
Is it the German show?
Das Show. Yeah. I think that's what it's called here.
You should get that on a shirt.
It does, yeah. I'm sure Das Show would involve soccer.
Okay.
Yeah, soccer or likely a sausage.
All right, get to the point. What happened?
You started this.
Sorry, it's my fault.
Yeah, it looks like it's not going to happen this year.
Oh,
looks
no.
Looks like I won't get to play in the first league.
Sent down.
Yeah, it's so far it's not. It's on a technicality, though. So that's what they're telling me, anyways. In order to play, I need to have a full-on German passport.
Okay.
Now I don't have citizenship. I forget what I have.
You have a German wife.
I have a German wife. I'm here
legally.
What
does that get you? What does that get you in paperwork?
A lot of heartache. You can love her, but she won't love you back.
Right.
Said yeah. Billy Bob Thornton. No, I'm all here legally and status and all that's all bang on, passed my tests, did language tests and all that stuff to fit in, but I don't have a passport. And in order to do that, from all of the official literature that I have obtained, tells me I would have to basically renounce my Canadian citizenship.
Do it.
Yeah, right. I know Canada's cheering for it. Yeah, no, that's fine. No problem, dude. Give it up.
No, you'll be fine. We'll give you another one.
Yeah. No, it's you can get it back, but you have to petition the court. Like, it's a whole process. And I always said that I would, if I could get dual citizenship, which some people keep saying, oh, yeah, you can do it. Some people can. I don't think I qualify. I'm not interested in giving up my Canadian citizenship.
So therefore, you're sent down to the minors.
Yeah. Therefore, I mean, I can play in the our second team here, whichever league they play in, which is a lower league.
What do they call one step down from Das Show?
Untershow. Das Untershow.
Yeah. I like that even better.
Yeah. So
is that double for the crappy show?
No. That's something else entirely. And don't Google German crappy show, because you're gonna get an eyeful.
Yeah. Okay.
Regardless, so I potentially will play for them. I was excited. I won't lie to you. If we get too far into this, which we're not going to do, but if we do, I will get emotional.
We're already buried.
Yeah, no, I will get emotional about it because I was a little upset. I was a little bit rattled that I couldn't play.
Did you bust a bat over your head or anything like that?
No. I wasn't mad at anybody. I was more disappointed. And that's a different kind of bat breaking situation.
You didn't like kick over a Gatorade cooler or anything?
No. I didn't do that. It's understandable. I mean, the reason that you are allowed X number of foreigners on the field, which is a very small number, like two or something like that.
Yeah.
And they've flown
better
in.
Players.
Oh, definitely better.
Yeah.
And younger, and they've flown them in from the States specifically to play. So the chances of me beating out these guys who are 22 ex, you know, pros that they've flown in are zero. And I knew that going in, so it was no illusions in my head. However, if I could have played as a German, that would be a little different. Not gonna happen.
Okay. Yeah, well,
we did play.
I think we're all feeling that it was quite a loss. For it's been Team Germany.
It's been a heck of a ride, isn't it? Since last week.
Since your batting practice.
Yeah, we played an exhibition game last night, a couple nights ago, against like a American high school here in near Stuttgart.
Okay.
Because of there's an army base and stuff like and whatnot, so they have a bunch of kids that, you know, need to go
and
to school.
How many at bats did you get?
I went 0-for-3.
That's why you got cut
with a walk. Yeah, I hit the ball. I just I did not get on, which is a little disappointing to me. But I got on by a walk. That's exciting in an exhibition game.
Great. But, so your official batting average in that German league is zero.
Well, this is an exhibition, so it doesn't look, you know. Technically it's infinity.
But that's what it would say on your card. One exhibition played, batting average zero.
No, I'm the guy, I make the cards. So mine will be very, it'll be in like 435 or something. Yeah.
Okay.
But I thought the best part was that, like, we're playing this high school team, and I thought, wow, I could actually, technically, age-wise, be the dad of every kid on the team.
Yeah.
And not just like back in the day when we were playing and be like, you know, I could be the dad, like, if, you know, I was a teenage dad, if I was like 14 or something, you know, which,
yeah,
giving my track record at 14, physically impossible, but but this one was like, no, it's like I could have been in my mid-20s and been their dad. Right. So that was kind of weird.
I think I got it.
Yeah. Do you need more?
I'm waiting for the photo stuff.
Are we talking about photos this week?
Yeah.
Okay. I have a question about your last week's show.
Okay.
Not the baseball stuff.
Okay.
We talked about your shutter speed on the being 1/180th or 1/180th.
Right.
That struck me as weird, and I didn't have my camera in front of me, but I was pretty sure that doesn't even exist as a shutter speed.
It only exists with the ETTL or the Canon flash on the camera. So if I have a Canon flash on my camera or off camera with the ETTL triggers, 1/180th exists. Otherwise, it doesn't. That's why the maximum sync speed in manual mode, like I was explaining, was 1/160th. But 1/180th exists only with the ETTL. I don't know why they've done it that way.
Okay.
But that's the way it is. And then, so if you look up in the 6D manual what the maximum sync speed is, it'll give you 1/180th. But that's only possible with a Canon or with another flash that's recognized by the camera. I think Yongnuo makes some flashes that will work in the same way.
Okay.
So ETTL will give you 1/180th. I don't know if it'll give it to you in manual mode. I haven't tried to be specific, but yeah, I had to check it too because I was sure that was the way it was.
It sounds to me like what they've done is for whatever reason, they've shot for 1/200th as the sync speed, probably have come up just short. Meaning like it's just in some pictures at 1/200th that some pictures you're going to see, you know, a little black line at the bottom every now and then. So what they've done is probably dialed in a safety zone. That's my guess. I have no idea what the base
is. I don't know. I have no idea, but I know that 1/180th is only available with ETTL triggers. I could never do that before. So,
well, weird.
Yeah, so there you go. A little and not. Maybe someone can explain it from, you know, the makers of Canon who are listening right now.
Yeah. Yeah, Jack Canon. I'm assuming he's Japanese, so that's probably his Americanized name.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Let us know why, how that all works.
I was going to pick a Japanese name for him, first name, but then, you know, it would just seem oddly racist if I picked one.
Probably.
If I accidentally got one wrong.
Yeah.
So moving on, if you work at Canon, phone us. Phone Adam at his house during the Canucks game 3 and explain.
And if you don't explain it, it's going to be okay. I'm going to be able to sleep tonight.
All right. So weird. Yeah. Last week's Exifoku.
Okay.
I did the shot of in the workshop there.
Right.
Mine was 50 millimeters. And you did the shot of your sister-in-law.
Yeah.
And that was 85 millimeters.
Right.
Moving on. Well, we didn't give that info last week.
Oh, okay.
This is
great.
The filling in the blanks.
Way to fill it in.
Yeah. Did you shoot anything good this week?
I shot a whole bunch of pictures at the park with my kids using exclusively off-camera flash high-speed sync.
Okay, so no.
No, it was awesome. Because I think you had talked about, okay, does it do high-speed sync? And I said, yes. But I hadn't really, you know, done a lot of shooting in high-speed sync. But we went out in the middle of the day to the park where, again, high-speed sync is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is high-speed sync off-camera is ridiculously awesome.
This is the game changer. This is one of the game changers that's happening right now. There's another one that's nothing to do with these cameras, so it's almost irrelevant to this conversation, but this is a game changer, the high-speed sync off-camera wireless.
Yeah, it is. It's incredible. So, and especially, you know, with the, with you know, having someone else hold your flash and just hold the flash and the trigger and then just wander around the park aiming it at whatever your target is, not only because it's all ETTL and I can make the changes if I want to make any changes in terms of the flash exposure compensation in camera, the person holding the flash doesn't have to do anything other than literally hold it and point it.
Right.
And I can do everything else from the camera body, and it is unbelievable.
Nice.
So the results were great. I'm going to post some to Facebook. I've saved it until now because I thought, you know, there needed to be some context.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to post, I don't know, maybe 10 pictures from that outing, and all done in high-speed sync. So
the reason the high-speed sync off-camera is a massive game changer. The reason for that is, first of all, I mean, before you used to essentially have to have it on the camera.
Right.
Which, you know, okay, frontal light, and well, you could also buy a cable. You could buy one of the very expensive cables, which probably cost as much as your Yongnuo wireless setup.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it's pretty
close. Those cables are way too expensive, and not tremendously long. I mean, you could get them longer, but they weren't really long, which meant your flash was going to be pretty close to your camera.
Right.
So let's say you want to take a nice portrait shot of somebody outside in the sun, which, okay, pick a better time, but let's say you don't have a choice, and you're going to use high-speed sync. Well, you're on a nice long lens, so you're standing far back. Well, your flash loses that power.
Exactly.
Off camera, you can have it just out of frame. Now, all of a sudden, you know, it's very, very close. Now the power issue isn't as big an issue.
Oh, no, that's exactly it. You can position somebody, you know, 3 feet away, but you can be standing 50 feet away.
Right.
And it all, like, I don't know how other to explain it, then in a lot of the photos, it looks almost 3D. because you're in the middle of the day, mm-hmm. the background can be exposed, you know, bright blue sky, bright green grass, and then it's like all of a sudden it just gives a huge pop to the subject mm-hmm. who could be moving at high speed, and you might be shooting, you know, wide open at, you know, 2.8 or something, and that flash of light from close range is it just looks amazing. I don't know how other to explain it, but it gives really a different feel to the photos, and again, I think it kind of looks 3D.
Great. Well, that's kind of the plan for photos anyway. That's the idea.
Yeah. And
yeah. Well, that's great. I look forward to seeing those then.
Yeah. So there you go. I'm majorly impressed with myself.
Now that only you have to have an ETTL capable flash.
Right.
To do that. So you can't just throw your what do you call it, Vivitar on there.
No. And get high speed. Here's the other thing about Yang Nuo. And again, I don't know if we're ever going to have an affiliation with them, but we should because I am in love with this company. Mm-hmm. They make very inexpensive flashes for Canon. Anyways, I don't know about the full Nikon line because I'm not a Nikon shooter, so I haven't investigated, but I'm pretty sure they have Nikon flashes as well.
Or they will.
I don't think they've built the triggers yet that will do what the Canon ones do. So with the Yang Nuo flashes, you can get a fully capable Yang Nuo flash that does everything that ETTL Canon does for a fraction of the price. Mm-hmm. So if people are shy about spending like three, I think the going rate for a 430 EX2 now is about $300.
Okay.
So if you're shy about that, I'm pretty sure you can find a Yang Nuo that does all the ETTL for about $150.
All right.
Yeah, there you go. And pair that with the triggers, which are just over $100. And then for $250, you've got your whole setup right there.
And that's approaching used SB28 territory now. Well,
exactly. Yeah, and which won't do the ETTL, obviously.
Right.
So
there you go.
Something to consider for people.
Okay, well, I'm going to need you to get on the horn with Yang Nuo and see if they want to be a sponsor.
All right.
Yeah, and then we'll...
Yeah, that is just pure advice based on how happy I am about the purchase. So
great.
There is zero affiliation there.
Well, good. Post those pictures. Look forward to it.
All right, I will.
Yeah.
What about you? I'm sure you did some shooting.
I did. I, at a local movie premiere, I went and shot some photos of that.
This is work?
Yeah, it is. Like, you threw me with that question. It was very confusing.
Okay.
There's a local filmmaker who's achieved international acclaim for some of his documentary films, a guy named Marcus Vetter. And he's just released a documentary called The Court about the International Court of Justice at The Hague.
Okay.
And so I had met with him a few months ago and saw a rough cut of the movie. And that was, I guess in November, I bet. And then, it was the official premiere. It was a small event. It wasn't a huge red carpet event like I'm going to tell you it is.
Right.
It was a very small thing, but I came out and shot some promotional stills that he, you know, for them to use to promote the movie. And so there's that. So the movie itself is about how the head prosecutor of the International Criminal Court and how it works, and while they're filming this documentary, the whole Libya uprising 2 years ago happens basically right in front of them. Like,
okay,
while they're in The Hague talking with the prosecutor, like the leader of the rebels phones the prosecutor on camera, and so that was kind of surreal to me to see, you know, like they were part of this. And And they went, you know, they shoot in the United Nations. And at some point when they're meeting with the prosecutor, Angelina Jolie shows up because she's involved in that. So she's in the movie. And it's pretty cool stuff. So.
And so what kind of photos were you doing? What kind of setup were you using?
In my head, I was like, okay, I'm going to have like, you know, because there's like a little bit of a meet and greet and champagne and stuff like that for the people that showed up. And so I thought, oh, I'm going to have a nice flash that, you know, wings across the crowd, and then I'll do ETTL on camera and with the black foamy thing and do a nice mix. And I did a little bit of that, but it just, the party wasn't really in one place. It was kind of moving around a little bit.
Right.
And then in the theater. And so I ended up shooting some promotional shots of him, them introducing the movie and taking questions and stuff like that. So It was a pretty basic setup.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing too interesting to talk about, but I'll see if I can post one of the pictures. I didn't get his permission yet, but I'm sure he'll be fine with it.
Post one of Angelina Jolie.
She did not show up. Yeah, that's really why I went. I was hoping she'd roll in.
Right.
But she did not make the premiere. But I ended up doing some other work, too. I ended up doing some translation work for him, so on a different project.
Right.
So that has nothing to do with photography, but doing translation is not... It's not a fun job. So...
I just thought maybe you could get a gig, you know, doing the Canadian commentary for the Division I German baseball team.
Yeah, no, that's already been locked down. I was saving that for the end of the show, but thanks.
Okay,
thanks for blowing the surprise. Okay, this week's photo challenge.
Okay.
Couch. It was, well, you, hey, was it technically yours? No. Yes.
Yeah. No, it was your challenge. I'd already done a backwards couch.
Yeah, but that the whole reason we did the show was because of your backwards couching.
Right. And you were so inspired by my picture of my dad of the backwards couch that you thought it had to be redone with another couch.
I just thought we talked about how to do it. Why do it? So we did it. Here we go. Here's your picture. You just got into a fight, evidently.
Yep.
Go. You tell me about your self-portrait.
I had a vision of what I was going to do, and I basically wanted to have a picture like I was going to use the couch as a prop, like I'd be sitting at a hockey game and I'm on the bench. So, you know, this is sort of a picture of me at the bench. So the boards are essentially where the couch is. It's acting as the boards and I'm sitting just kind of hanging over. At the beginning of hockey games, and I'm sure you've seen a few, they often will do like, you know, the lights all down and the Canucks anyways, and they'll have a sort of a blue spotlight that comes out, and a lot of the posters and promotional materials they put up with the Canucks have this very black, like where they're standing at the national anthem. And again, there's kind of a blue highlighter spotlight in the background. And I just, in my head, I had that idea that I was going to use the backwards couch and have it be nothing like a backwards couch,
okay,
but do something that was hockey related. So in my head, I had this vision of me sitting at the bench and the really, really dark, and then the blue highlight coming in. And the teeth thing, I tried to make a smile that would lend itself to having missing a few teeth. Mm-hmm. And then I photoshopped out a couple of teeth. So the photo is completely untouched other than the teeth thing. So I didn't, this was all in camera. So everything you see there was in camera. I might have brought up a shadow, maybe about 2 or 3%. But yeah, this was all in camera.
Okay, I thought you did black tape on your teeth, actually.
No black teeth. I just basically just change the color on those and burn the teeth out.
Are you making fun? I thought you were making fun of me as well.
No, I wasn't making fun of you. This is, to me, the idea of a hockey player in playoffs. there's definitely a few hockey players out there missing some teeth. So yeah. At one point I was going to spit a tooth out and I was going to have it sort of, you know, a tooth spitting across. But then I decided, hey, it's going to take too much away from the lighting, because I was really... in my head, I really had an idea for what I wanted the lighting to look like. So again, this was a pre-visualized, and I could not be happier, regardless of what you think or anybody else out there thinks of the photo. I don't care, because I had this in my head and this was exactly what I envisioned. And when I put it up on the computer, I was just like, that's it. That's exactly what I had. So
just tell me it's good. Tell me you like it.
No, I don't care, because I know it's good.
There you go.
Yeah.
The lighting is great. I didn't understand that you were going for the fake boards. Now it makes much more sense. There is certain...
You know what? Can I just say something before you go any further?
Yeah.
I knew this question that, you know, some people say, oh, I didn't know. You know what I said this morning? Without any leading, I asked Jack, I'm like, hey, what do you think of this picture? He's like, oh, it looks like you're sitting at the bench in a hockey game.
Right.
So he's 4.
Yeah. No, I understand. He's 4. Yeah. I showed him my picture last week, and he's like, yeah, he's handing wood, Dad. What's the problem? Yeah, what are you? I'm 4 over here. Okay?
All right.
Now pass the broccoli.
So go ahead. Have your criticism.
No, it's not criticism. I was thinking it didn't really lend itself, this kind of photo didn't lend itself to a couch, but now that you're making it be the boards, there is a certain ironic, ironicity, I think, is what I'm looking for.
Ironicity.
About that, and that now you may have tapped into something really good. Like that would be a great series of couch guys waiting to play. So in that regard, I don't have any criticism about that. It looks good.
All right.
I do have criticism in another area.
Go for it.
Besides the self-indulgent, hey, look at me. no, the I would like to see a little bit more of your helmet.
That's just purely. Oh, sorry. Yeah. That's just purely. I had to crop it that way because I shot it on the black like the photo gray paper in behind. Mm-hmm. But my gray paper is not wide enough.
Okay.
And so in order to make it look proportional, I had to, unless I really was going to spend more time in Photoshop, I could have kept above the helmet in, mm-hmm. but it would have been just a custom crop. So I just went with an 8x10, and in order to get the sides out that the paper was not wide enough for,
right.
that's why it was cropped to the top. So I have room above that part of the helmet. Uh-huh. It's just, it was just purely because I did an 8x10 crop.
Because you're going to frame this, aren't you?
I totally am going to frame this.
You're going to be handing
them up. And Lisa's like, no, where are you going to put that? Take that to your office. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm framing that.
You got to frame that and put it at the office. That will be awesome.
I'm totally putting it at the office.
Yes. So that was my other criticism. I'd like to see more of your glove. The way your glove and your head are cropped, it makes it seem a little bit crowded.
Right.
But in that, I understand the situation. I understand why. There you go.
And my trigger, my remote shutter release, mm-hmm. is actually inside my glove.
Wow, that is not in your left hand. That's just not visible. Oh, that's a glove too.
They're both gloves.
Ah, yeah, I see. Yeah.
They're both gloves. But I'm trying to do the trigger in my hand, and I was trying to hide it a little bit. So that's the glove positioning. But what I actually figured, I like this smile and I like this one the best. Some of them I have my hands just kind of both hanging over. But it was all about getting the light, because the tape on the stick is black. So getting the light to hit the bottom of the stick so it actually looks like a hockey stick. Mm-hmm. So all of this, and I had you can imagine, there's two lights here. I'm in the middle of my living room. I got the black paper up. Like, this was a whole ordeal to pull this off. Mm-hmm. And I should have taken a picture of the setup because, I don't think too many people are doing this in their living room.
Not normal people.
Push all the furniture around. Like, it was, it was a big ordeal. And again, I'm doing this on a tripod and I'm triggering it myself. So anyways, I got to a point where I was just like, yeah, I hope I got it because I'm not doing this anymore. I was sweating. I got a jersey on, the helmet on.
Did you go look at it on the computer before you broke down the set?
I probably took 20, and I made sure that their critical focus looked good. And then I was just like, yeah, that's it. I can work around what I did there because it looked good on camera. I was like, something's got to be decent in there. But no, I put them on the computer. I was just done with it because I was sweating bullets, like I said.
Yeah, I very much like the texture, especially on the skin tones. It looks really good. The love it.
Thank you.
There you go. Well,
there you go.
All right, and then I also.
So that's just this. Oh, sorry. Let me just say that's just a softbox at close range, or not a softbox. An umbrella at close range, mm-hmm. for the key light, and then the other one is a bare speed light with like a really heavy blue gel, like a 2.5 stop loss blue gel.
Okay.
So that's all that is. And that's not far away from me because of the big loss from the blue gel. I had to have that probably at about a quarter power to get the blue spill and to get the blue rim light.
Uh-huh. That's it. That sounds familiar with my shot. I also used a blue backlight that does not show up because my kid was not cooperating.
Okay.
So we'll ignore the fact that I actually put a blue black just because it was, the whole Canucks. I wanted just a hint of blue because of the Canucks.
Right.
I did the Canucks theme as well.
Did you do yours after you saw mine?
I did.
So this is where I shouldn't have played my hand too early. I told you last week I shouldn't play my hand too early.
What would I have done differently?
Okay.
What would I have possibly done?
Maybe not done a picture of your daughter in a Canucks jersey on the couch?
It would have been the exact same photo, but maybe not with the Canucks jersey. But right. I probably would have because it is the playoffs and flying.
Right.
Flying
no, I understand. There's a possibility there, but yeah. I'm pretty sure that I win by DQ because you copied me.
Yeah, no, people look at these two images and they definitely think, wow, I can't believe Alan copied Adam.
You're a tracer.
Yeah. Tracer. Right, right. I got it. I understand what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. No, these look identical.
They do.
Yeah, the whole tone, everything. It's just like, wow. It's like I forget which one is mine.
Well, no. You have to change something. I mean, that's the whole art of a good copycat is you got to make a few changes so it's not immediately obvious.
That's
but
not what Puff Daddy does.
You fully copied me. This is a full-on copy.
No, Puff Daddy just plays the Led Zeppelin and calls it his. Yeah. So that's not even altering it at all. Just yells, yeah, yeah, at the beginning. And now, hey, new song.
Right.
Puts everybody split the
all right,
profits.
No, go ahead with your copy.
No, why bother? I mean, hey, this is just a pale second. I mean, I was going to try to be really self-involved like you, and then, but I was like, I don't know, maybe I'll shoot my kid instead. So only partially self-involved.
Right.
No, I went for the white background. I wanted a nice, light, breezy feel to it, so I blew out the background, did the couch.
Okay.
You know, yeah. Umbrella. Basic stuff, how we've talked about this in the past. Technically is a two light shoot. I used three lights, but since she was not cooperating and standing where the rim light would have hit her, and I all of a sudden my window of opportunity shrunk from 5 minutes down to 6 seconds.
Right. I actually see it now. I didn't notice it before, but I see it on her left arm.
Yeah, it is there.
And a little bit in her hair. Yeah. A little bit in her
It would have been better had I had another 30 seconds to with the subject, but no.
Right.
No, my whole pet peeve here is when people say, hey, I'm coming over at 4, like, because friends of ours came over with their kids. And they're like, yeah, okay, I'll be there at 4. I don't remember what time it was, but let's say 4 o'clock. And then they show up at 3:45. That doesn't help me.
Right.
So they showed up early while we were doing this, and the kid wanted to go out and play instead of doing this. So that's why she... But here she is. I said to her, I motivated her. I was like, here you go. Do your best. Cheer for Tony Tanti and Thomas Gradin.
Right.
And I was trying to keep it current, but I couldn't think of anything recent, player-wise.
Right.
So here she is doing the wave.
Awesome. No, I like it.
All right.
It's a good shot.
Okay, there's not much else to talk about. That's the backwards couch. Moving on.
Yeah. Right. I win again.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Because you show those two pictures to anybody, and who would you rather look at?
Well, definitely. That goes without saying.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's,
still, mine's better.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult when you're in the photo. So we should, to make it fair, you probably shouldn't be in the photo anymore. just to even it out.
You know what's the worst thing for you about that is that you took a cute picture of your kid and I'm still cuter.
Yes. No, obviously. I don't know if it's the bald head or the missing teeth. It's definitely got an animal magnetism that she doesn't have.
Yeah, and it's my new profile pic on Facebook.
Oh, so. Wow. It made the cut, eh?
Yeah. No, I was like, that is definitely going on as the new profile.
Yeah,
pic.
I'm sure it's probably in the top 10. Is there a top 10 list of Facebook profile pics?
I don't know, but there should be.
There's got to be
and
a
that
website
should be
for
on
that.
It.
Yeah, there's got to be a ranking, and you got to be definitely top 10.
Yeah,
North America.
I think that's 8.
Yeah, North America at least. Exifoku for this. We both shot full frame. I shot the photo of my daughter at ISO 320. Focal length is 85 millimeters, shutter speed 1/200th. And I used flash, as we talked about. Keep that in mind. So we want to know what's the f-stop, which is going to be difficult to tell, but figure it out. Or don't. It's up to you. Adam shot his at ISO 250, also 85 millimeter, at 1/160th. And what's his f-stop? We're all on pins and needles.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention is that I successfully employed the trigger piggyback technique where I'm shooting with the new triggers controlling the key light, and then I've got the other triggers, the cactus trigger, mounted on top because there's a hot shoe on top of the Yang Nuo trigger.
Right.
And then I'm using that to control the other flash in manual mode. So again, it worked seamlessly.
Are we still talking about your photo?
No, I'm just saying the trigger thing, because we had talked about that before, and I hinted at that I'd heard that it worked, and it does work. So
okay,
just again trying to sell the triggers, which I get nothing from, but I just want other people to enjoy what I'm enjoying.
You're a great businessman, right there. That's a good business
model. Yeah, that's it. That's a good sell right there.
That is all right. Well, this week's topic, we covered Exifoku. Yeah, done. Cross it off. This week's topic, we want to talk a little bit about different modes, because I've been thinking about you and your ETTL off-camera stuff, and all the different things, and I've been thinking a lot about different modes for different parts of photography.
Okay.
So, first of all, shooting modes. What are the different modes that we shoot in?
Manual ETTL, or not ETTL, manual AV mode, auto, the TV mode.
Right. These are all the these are the modes that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Now, it's also for flash. You just said there is ETTL, which
and high speed sync,
which used to be. That's something a little bit different. But in terms of basic modes, there's ETTL and full manual.
Right.
ETTL used to be just auto. It would be auto built into the flash. Like your SB28 will handle auto. It'll handle auto off camera.
Right.
Like sort of in a dumb fashion. It takes a reading of how much light comes back to the flash itself.
Oh, okay.
But it doesn't factor in on anything else. It doesn't factor in, you know, your aperture or shutter speed or any filters you might have or anything else like that. That's where the through the lens part is awesome.
Oh, okay. I see.
But so there's that. And then there's metering, there's evaluative spot, and everything in between. So I've been thinking a lot about the different modes that people shoot in. So let's talk about the camera first. We'll get to flash in a bit, but with camera first, when you first break out your camera out of the box, you're a brand new user, you've migrated from point and shoot, what are you shooting on?
Probably auto.
That big green pumpkin, square or whatever it looks like on your camera. That's what most people do because it's intimidating. Your camera is probably pretty intimidating. A lot of stuff going on, and we have talked about this. That's the whole idea of the show, is to get you to not shoot auto.
Right.
So if you're listening to this episode number 122, you should not be using auto.
Exactly.
Now I don't want to shame you, but you should be ashamed of yourself. Take a long, hard look in the mirror and realize that Adam and Alan think that you're better than that.
Right.
Okay, Alan does. Adam's kind of a jerk.
Right.
So what after that, after auto, where do people move to? Like, if they've heard the show or just kind of explored stuff on their own on the internet or read the manual, next.
Probably AV mode.
AV, I think a lot of people go to P first.
Really?
Yeah, which I don't know where that advice comes from. It was advice that was given to me early on.
And the P mode is where you choose the ISO, but everything else is auto, right?
Correct.
Okay, so that's a waste of time, in my opinion.
It is. It's a little bit, I would say, skip P mode or shoot with it for a day and move on.
Right.
But basically what it does is it's sort of like AV mode, except for it chooses the aperture for you. Otherwise, it's the same, but basically it runs anywhere between, you know, you're wide open at, say, 1.8, depending on the lens, all the way up to f16, and it sort of puts things in the middle. So, you know, if you want to shoot at f5.6 and it comes up with the shutter speed of 1/30th, it's going to shift everything. It's going to open up the aperture and give you a decent shutter speed.
Okay.
Still too much going on. You're better than that even, too. So,
yes.
So skip it and go to AV. Now, here's where we get into AV is good, because now you're probably not a quote-unquote novice at this point.
Right.
You probably have some sort of idea or are willing to find out how the camera works and how lighting, the basic exposure triangle works. So it's sort of the first rung of a good shooter. Just, okay. Just yell yeah in there.
Yeah.
You're the best, Al. Okay. Now, you have more control, but not complete control. The camera still does a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of, you know, figuring out what the shutter speed should be and all that stuff. And however, the camera makes a lot of choices for you. And the camera's pretty smart, but, again, the idea is to work up to full manual.
Okay.
That's where I shoot.
You're awesome.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it because it would sound like bragging, so I'm glad you said it. No, the idea is to get comfortable on full manual mode. Now, once you're there, you're starting to get good, or you're really good. You're a really good shooter if you shoot often in manual. Now, you shoot mostly in manual, correct?
I only shoot in manual.
Right.
Yeah.
Now,
sometimes to my own chagrin, because, you know, you're constantly making adjustments, but, you know, you get what you want. That's the upside.
That's exactly right. Now, you trust, and when you're shooting in full manual mode, you trust that you are smarter than the camera.
Yes.
And you have a certain self-confidence that, okay, I'm going to get this shot. And if you don't, you probably know why, and you can go ahead and fix that.
Right.
But you have complete control over the exposure. Now, there is a lot of room in the manual club. If you're brand new to manual, you probably are just starting to get good. You're not shooting at, you know, Adam's level.
No, I'm awesome.
Yeah. Well, hang on. There's another step, so don't get too excited.
All right.
But you could be just starting out, or you could be, you know, a really good shooter, professional shooter, shooting in manual. Now, I shoot manual 99% of the time, and by that I mean 100. I don't shoot AV anymore, but there's a reason for that. I've shot a lot of situations where I know what the shutter speed's going to be. So I put myself in that position, and I have it pre-dialed, and if I'm off by one or two clicks, that's fine. I can fix that quickly. But I don't find myself, you know, being way off. I don't go to take a picture and think, wow, I am 12 stops away on the shutter speed here. What am I thinking? I really thought this would be 1/8,000th, and really it's a 30th of a second. Never happens.
Right.
So that's it. So if you're shooting manual, good for you. Keep doing it. If you're not, you want to work from AV to manual. Do you know why?
One less variable to sort out?
Possibly. But if you get really good at manual, you can get back to shooting AV mode again.
Okay.
And this, in my opinion, is when you become a master. You've heard of Joe McNally, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's a friend of the show that I've heard of him.
And you like him.
And he has no idea who I am. And so right. I think that qualifies. I'm not sure of how it all works, but I think that qualifies as friend of the show.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you ever meet him, tell him that we exist. So I'm pretty sure reading his books that he shoots in AV mode. Like almost exclusively. Yet he is very, very good. If you look at his pictures, you realize that he's very good at it.
Okay.
Now, why? How could he even get to that? Why would he bother shooting AV mode if he's that good?
I don't know.
I don't know either, but I'm going to surmise that he knows his camera inside out. He knows cameras inside out, but specifically his own camera.
Okay.
He knows how it's going to react to the parameters he's given it. When he gets out in these situations, he knows what it's going to do in any given situation. There's not going to be any surprises. And so I think he shoots JPEG too, because he's that confident. Whereas you and I shoot manual, shoot RAW, because, you know, we're going to get it close, or we're going to get it, but if we miss by a little bit, we can always fix it when we get back home.
Right.
However, he goes that extra step. Now, he's come back to AV. Now, what is never mentioned is that he didn't always shoot AV mode. He didn't move from auto to AV and then shutter down. He would have had to, because he's shot film for so long, he would have shot thousands and thousands of rolls of film, and that's what's gotten him to this situation where he's able to be the master. So, no auto exposure. He wouldn't have had any auto exposure on some of his cameras. He wouldn't have even been able to frame the shot through the lens. I'm guessing he shot with a lot of rangefinders.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he shot with a Leica back in the day. which means you don't get to see, like a single lens reflex means that you look through the mirror and you see what the camera sees. With a rangefinder, you see what's pretty close to what the camera's going to see, but it's not bang on. So without having done that, without having done all the sweating in manual mode, he would not have become the master in AV mode. So what's the moral here?
I'm not sure.
I was just happy you're still on the line.
We should start a fan club for Joe McNally.
No, I think he's doing fine on his own.
All right.
I'm just using him as an example. I think David Hobby's the same. I think he shoots JPEG because it's just he knows how everything's going to look, but because he's made the mistake, he's gone out and shot and shot and shot and shot. So the moral here is work yourself up to manual and make mistakes. Learn from them. Shoot until your hands bleed. Not literally, though, because then you're probably doing it wrong.
your camera is laced with razor blades.
yeah, that's a horrible error you've made. But that's where I am now. I don't know if I'll ever get to AV mode. If that's my situation, I'm not that comfortable shooting in AV mode and JPEG where I can just go off and do an actual job, a deliverable like that. I shot those. Right. I shot a job last week. We talked about briefly on the show the product shots I was going to do, and in order to save time, I got it all dialed in camera, and I shot JPEG plus RAW, so I could just potentially just deliver the JPEGs. Here you go. Here's the JPEGs.
Right.
Didn't happen. I had to go back in and make some small adjustments in the RAW.
Now, do you think what they're doing, because again, if they're in AV mode, they're making adjustments constantly, so they must be just dialing up and down exposure compensation constantly?
Correct. Yep, they're definitely...
So how is that different? I mean, I understand that they know how it's going to react, and so they know how much... But how is that any different than making the constant adjustments to all of your parameters?
I think it's just speed. Like I think
you think it's faster to do it that way
for them. Yeah, for like in any given situation, the true master is going to know when he walks in. Okay, I'm going to shoot this on AV, but I'm going to dial it down. I'm going to start at minus 1 1/3 stops because I know what's going to happen. Because I know my metering mode. I know how my camera is going to meter this scene. Looking at the scene in his head, he can look and see that highlight's happening. There's this percentage of dark. My camera's going to meter it here. I'm going to tell it go 1 1/3 stop less than that. That's what I want. Boom. And I'll bet you he gets it within the first couple shots. Probably usually on the first shot, I would assume. There's not a lot of chimping and messing around like I do. You know, when I'm setting, and this is, I don't do a lot of chimping to get it right in an ambient photo. Situation in an ambient light situation. However, when I'm lighting with flash, it does take me a few to get ready.
For sure, yeah.
And so I'm going to guarantee that when they're shooting in AV and that he gets it right almost immediately. Now there's probably some tinkering, but it's probably very very fast.
And this is where I've noticed that in terms of speed, the difference for ETTL off-camera flash is it's just speed. Like if I know I'm going to set up my ambient light a certain way, when I go to add flash, it is just on the first or second shot, I'm there already. So in terms of shooting with my kids or tonight, I took a little quick little family portrait. It's just it's amazing how much it's sped it up just by quickly going to ETTL. And if I shoot with an umbrella, well, then I just, you know, because I'm going to lose some light there, I just bump the flash exposure compensation. So that does speed things up.
So it doesn't take into account the fact that it's coming through an umbrella.
How would it do that?
Well, it's through the lens, because what it's doing is it's shooting light through the umbrella, hitting your subject, coming through the lens, and then relaying the information.
Oh. I don't know. Again, I've just been making adjustments up and down. My assumption has been that it's going to lose some light coming through the umbrella, and it doesn't know that, but maybe it is. But it seems to be lit better when I'm through something if I add a little bit of flash exposure.
Could be. It absolutely could be. That's the taste. But let's say you go to take a photo with ignore the umbrella for a second, but you have the ETTL flash set. You pop your at the, just before you take the picture, you pop your sunglasses in front of your lens, completely covering your lens, let's say. Now all of a sudden, less light's going to come through. In theory, you should not have to compensate for this. The camera's going to read the light that comes in through the lens. Now, it'll be less light coming through because of your sunglasses, and it will make the compensation on its own. That's what through the lens does.
Right.
Whereas before, like let's say you were shooting before, like let's say I'm walking around with a handheld light meter like we did when we shot film that day last summer, remember?
Yeah.
Now, you're going to shoot with the handheld meter, but what you've done is you've put an ND filter, an ND6, eating two stops of light on your lens, and you have another filter, a polarizer, which is going to take, let's say, a full stop. So you're going to take three stops. Well, you have to tell your meter, you have to adjust that accordingly and say, okay, I'm going to meter this, but I'm losing three stops, so correct for that in my head.
Right.
Your camera does all that. You just push the button, and as the light comes through those filters, it knows how much light's coming through and adjusts accordingly.
And you know what? Good that you make this point, because I shot a bunch of pictures with the polarizer on my lens without realizing that it was still on there.
Okay.
And did not make any adjustments to the ETTL off camera, and everything was exposed properly.
That's why.
So that situation, I'm on board with. I have this feeling, and again, we'll have to confirm this, that through the umbrella it's a different reading method.
I don't know how that could be. I think all it knows is, hey, how much light is coming into the camera, adjust accordingly.
And you don't think that would be affected by the flash having to go through... like you wouldn't have to increase the power of the flash when you're losing whatever, let's say, a stop of light coming through the umbrella.
Well, in theory, it should know. That's the point of ETTL. It should just know. It doesn't know what's happening to the light prior to it getting there. All it knows is it measures how much light is coming through. I need a factor of 8. It's coming in at 9, so I'm going to dial it down to an 8. That's essentially what it's doing. Those numbers do not correspond to anything. That's just numbers I made up.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but getting into that, that's the reason. Now, what different flash modes? Like this is what I want to talk a little bit about. When you're in auto mode on your camera, and you're just shooting the full green thing, and you've got external flash mounted on the camera, it's going to be an ETTL.
Right.
Just leave it. Don't even mess with it. Just leave it. Let it go. I happen to like I use ETTL on camera. I love it. It is so much better than me. For that,
I agree.
Same with if you're in AV mode, leave it on ETTL. Now, getting back to Joe McNally, that's what he shoots with. He shoots all of his off camera flashes are all ETTL in AV mode. That's how he shoots, and because he knows how it's all going to perform, that's how he gets his good results. Now, when I have my flash on camera and I'm shooting in full manual mode, I still have my flash in ETTL.
Okay.
So I don't worry too much about it. It does a good job. Now, I still adjust the flash exposure compensation here and there, but that's a situation where I generally know what it's going to be before I take the photo. I know what I'm going to have to dial that into to get the result I want, which comes from a lot of bad photos. A lot of bad photos that I've made adjustments for, I've learned how to fix that before we start.
Okay.
Now, off camera, that's a different situation. And now here's where it's going to start to get interesting for you, Adam, at the 1 hour mark of our show.
Yeah. I'm on pins and needles here.
It's, if you're an auto, where did I go? I just lost my I'm not even going to cut that out.
And that's the end of the show.
I just, I shouldn't have had all those beers this morning.
You were going to make a great point, and you were going to finish it off with a fantastic take home.
No, we still have like 30 minutes to go on this. now that you can afford ETTL, though, because before it was you could afford it sort of-ish, but now that you can afford really good ETTL off-camera flash, let's talk about that difference.
Okay.
Okay. So now my suggestion to you, and you have no choice because you've already done it, but if you're listening to this and you're thinking, hey, I'm going to get those triggers because Adam said they're awesome.
Yeah.
Learn to shoot manual flash off camera first, even if you have ETTL.
I agree.
It will make you better.
Absolutely.
Personal story, I learned to cut film, like movie stuff, not just, I've never actually spliced, cut and spliced film. I'm not that old. And if you're that old, sorry. but I learned how to cut movies on 3/4 inch tape. Actually, VHS to VHS, first of all. But then 3/4 inch tape means you have two tapes. You have one that you hit play on and one that you hit record on. And let it run. And you have to do it in real time and make each edit counts. And
there's a tip in here somewhere. Right?
There's a tip. Oh, hey, calm down. Or we could talk more about you and your couch picture. It's up to you.
There's other things I could mention.
Right. So I learned how to do this. Now, it's very time consuming. But once I learned how to cut and make an actual movie, each edit was planned and I knew how long the shots had to be. And there's a certain craft to it that comes. And then I moved over to the Avid, which was the first computer editing system.
Okay.
Which is nonlinear, and all of a sudden it was like I could fly. I took all the skills I learned and had to do manually, and boom, they applied right into the computer, but way faster.
But this is like an analogy.
But I knew how to edit, though. The point was, I wasn't learning how to edit while learning a new machine, while doing this, while doing that. I knew all the specifics about editing.
Right.
And how that happened, how long, how that all fit together, how long shots should be, what you cut to, because you couldn't make mistakes on the 3/4 inch. Now I can, now one thing that that is one of my strong points when I'm selling myself as an editor is that I edit very quickly. I don't have a sit down and have contests with other editors because that would be pretty lame.
Yeah.
But I am very, very fast from going from start, all the raw clips to the finished product, very quick. Because I learned to cut on tape. Now this is
let's talk about why I'm awesome.
This isn't about me being awesome. This is about about putting in the hard work. Okay, it's about me being awesome, in the hard work.
There's a moral to the story.
Now the same principle applies with off camera flash. Learn the basics of light. Learn how it performs. Do you need to know the inverse square law?
Yes.
No, the answer, that's a trick question. You don't need to know it.
But you have to know how it translates to light.
It's nice to have an idea of how it feels. How does light behave? How does the inverse square law sort of affect light? What does that even mean? Well, light gets weak as you get further away from the light source. That's it.
And I think that's important.
It is important. You don't need to measure everything out and go, all right, well,
No, of course not, no. But I think it's good to know what that is, because I think a lot of people don't understand how light falls off.
But if you go and shoot off-camera flash in manual mode, you're going to find out pretty quick.
Yes.
You're going to go and get a feeling for how that performs. Now, if you constantly have your flash in ETTL and your camera doing all the, changing everything for you, it's not going to feel the same. You're not going to get the same experience.
Absolutely agree.
And so when you find yourself in a situation where, like, you're just not getting the results, you're not going to know what to do.
And I take this one step further for people doing off-camera flash or just starting to do off-camera flash. Just start with one flash.
Yes.
Because everything you're saying is true, but I think a lot of times there's a temptation to, I'm going to get three triggers and I'm going to get three flashes or two flashes even. And now it's kind of like, opening up your DSLR and jumping immediately to manual mode. There's just so many moving parts. Mm-hmm. That I think you should just spend a lot of time practicing one flash in, like you say, manual mode and get good at that. And then once you understand the light and how manual flash works, then adding a second light is not that difficult.
Do you use a GPS system in your car when you're driving somewhere?
Only if I have no idea where I am.
Right. See, I do not. I have borrowed one before, but I don't use one. I'm not a fan.
So you use maps?
Yeah. I basically use maps, or I look ahead of time of where I'm going to go and figure out how to get there.
You're one of those guys that prints out a turn-by-turn directions from MapQuest and spends the whole time he's driving staring at his lap.
No, and only because it would take effort to turn the printer on.
Right.
It's more laziness than anything. No, I look at where to go, and I feel that if I can get generally in the area, I can find what I'm looking for. If I'm off by a little bit, I can somehow figure out how to correct for that and find what I need. Except when you're driving in Prague, because that's very difficult, but that's a whole different situation.
This is the first takeaway. Don't drive in Prague.
Well, take your GPS. We did. We took a GPS to Prague for that reason. We borrowed one. But other than that, I don't like doing it. To me, GPS is your ETTL. Now, it's good to have, and it can make things go quicker, but you should have an understanding. Like, if you're driving around Vancouver, and you know you punch in your GPS and address, and all of a sudden, instead of being downtown Vancouver, you're in Abbotsford.
Right.
If you don't know Vancouver, you might not even know that you're going the wrong way entirely. But if you have an idea of how Vancouver goes, you'll know right away, no, this is the wrong address. I need to make an adjustment here. So that's all I'm saying is have a look at the map of the area and then use your GPS. That's a better advice.
Okay.
So once you have a feeling for manual flash, then try ETTL. It is awesome. I don't want to tell you that it's not awesome. ETTL, off-camera flash, is awesome. But you have to know its limitations before you can rely on it.
Okay.
Now, on to metering modes. Do we have time for that?
No.
No, we don't. We've discussed it before, though.
Yeah, they're out there.
Did you know that your ETTL flash even has different metering modes of its own?
Give me an example.
Well, I don't know what they're called. This is like evaluative and then Luke Skywalker or something. I forget what they're
like
called.
In the actual flash?
Yeah, you can go in and you can dial in this couple different metering modes for your flash.
Like, am I dialing them in on the camera or am I dialing them actually on the flash?
I think you can do either or. Easier on the camera because it's a better heads up menu versus the other, you know, menu on the flash. But yeah, there's different. You can change the modes. My opinion is I don't mess with it. I don't worry too much.
I didn't know it existed, yep. So that's news to me. And is it for sure? It would be on the 430 too.
I have no idea. I don't have a 430.
Yeah. So I have my doubts because I've been through what I thought was every single menu on my camera and potentially on my flash, and I have never come across it.
Well, that menu won't show up unless your flash is mounted. I don't know if it'll show up in the Yongnuo triggers, but I have no idea. But it should show up when it's mounted to your camera. It'll show up as an... Yeah. Otherwise, it won't. It's kind of like your elusive 1/180th of a second.
Right.
It won't show up without it.
Okay, well, I'm going to look into it.
You look into it. I looked into it. I did not. I don't mess with mine. I leave it on the factory setting. I'm fine with the results I'm getting. I don't tinker with it, so... So that's it. That's what modes you should be in.
Great.
There was an answer there, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Get better at it. Practice, make mistakes, get better.
And everybody, seriously, who's still listening to this podcast at episode 122 should get their flash off camera.
I don't know why we decided that each episode would be as long in minutes as the number of episode.
Yeah.
We've just gone over 2 hours.
This is a long one for sure. Oh, can I mention one more thing about my picture? And I'm dead serious. I'm not kidding when I say that.
Okay.
I used your tip for that. Because we're kind of short on tips this week. I don't know if you've noticed.
Right.
But one of the takeaways that I got from last time, remember we were talking about how you flagged your flash in last week's picture, or not your flash, your umbrella with using the black reflective part?
Correct.
And I told you that I watched a video and I used the black foam to flag mine. Mm-hmm. I used your trick for my photo this week. I used the half black umbrella because I wanted to keep as much light spilling onto the background as possible.
Okay.
So I used your trick. So mine was lit with the half umbrella this week, my key light. So I just wanted to say thank you. That was a good trick and really, really quick for me to just put a couple of clips on the umbrella and hang the black part across the umbrella.
All right. I use that one quite often.
So, yeah, that was my first attempt at it. So, anyways, the other thing I wanted to mention, I know we're getting to the end of the episode, is I did order another light modifier that is in transit and should be here for our next show. So I'm sure I'll be raving about it next episode.
Or are you going to save it for the next week and tell us what it is? Or you want to tell
us? I can tell you what I ordered. What did you order? Because it's, I ordered a softbox.
Ah.
Yeah. So I've been, again, Neil's book really triggered something because, you know, in almost every shot he's using a softbox, and I was like, yeah, I gotta get one of these. And so I looked up the one that he had listed, which is like a Lastolite, which of course, like everything, is a Ferrari, right? Mm-hmm. And I looked up the cost, and again, it's very collapsible and everything, but it was just, I wasn't going to spend what they were asking. And then I read a bunch of reviews, and so I ended up going with Cheetah Stand makes some softboxes, and I remember Amber in a previous episode telling us that she used the stands, mm-hmm. and being really happy with it. And I read a whole bunch of positive reviews about their what's called their Q-Box line. So I don't know if you've heard of them previously.
I have
you heard
yeah.
of? So anyway, so I went with the Q-Box 24, which looks awesome, and again, very portable. And was about half the price of the Lastolite.
The 24 probably refers to 24 inches?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's the 24, and again, it folds down into like next to nothing.
Okay.
And except for the bracket. The bracket looks like it weighs a couple of pounds, so that part is the only part that isn't ultra portable, but the rest of it folds down into next to nothing. It looks like it's simple to use, had a better bracket than anything else out on the market, and was much much better reviewed than the alternatives in the price range. So
all right.
I'm looking very... And it came with a grid, because that was the big thing, is it came with the modifiers, two different modifiers, all for the same price, as opposed to everything else was just basically the softbox without anything. So I really wanted the grid.
So we're setting up a future episode of softbox versus umbrella.
Yeah, no, I don't know if it's going to be, you know, that difference. And again, there's a lot of argument about, you know, what the difference is. But I wanted something that wasn't going to blow over when I go to the beach,
mm-hmm.
Or to take pictures down in Steveston, that was going to be a little less of a wind sail.
Did you?
And also just wanted to have the little easier control in terms of directing the light.
Did you buy sandbags?
No, but I'm going to. You know what I'm going to use? This is the physio side of me, is I'm going to use ankle weights.
Okay, that'll work too.
Yeah.
That'll work.
And they're much cheaper, so for anybody out there, there's my advice. Ankle weights, Canadian Tire, if you don't live in Canada, whatever your tire
They can't be cheaper than sandbags.
Is. You don't think so?
Well, I don't know. I paid very little for my sandbags. They're pretty good, actually. They're very, very cheap. And what I like about mine, specifically... Now that we're going to make this a 2-hour episode.
Yeah, let's go for a shoot for two.
I like mine because you put your own sand in, which means you take your own sand out when you travel.
Oh, that's a good plan.
Yeah, so I basically need them here in Germany and just fly with the bags, which is
great.
Much lighter than the very heavy bags.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but other than that, I mean, you know, like at some point I will just have a set here and a set in Vancouver. Meaning, on my next trip back to Vancouver to work, I'll just have some bags waiting for me, some new sandbags, because they're that cheap and might as well just have them preloaded. But there you go. Okay.
All right.
Good tip. I look forward to seeing getting the softbox. And next week's challenge, though, not going to be softbox.
Okay. What's next week's challenge?
I'd like to start. Let's do gels.
Awesome.
Anything to do with gels and what's the difference between a gel and a filter, real quick?
My understanding is the gel goes on the flash and the filter goes on your lens.
Blam. Moving on. There's more to it than that, but what we're talking about here is exactly that. The gel is for the flash, and that's what we're going to do. So we're going to put some gels on our flash and go from there.
Great.
Next week, and maybe even ties into next week's episode. We'll see.
Awesome.
Where can people find your stuff, Adam?
Facebook. And Two Hosers Facebook site. And also occasionally on schwartzchronicles.com.
Awesome.
And your stuff?
AlanAttridge.com, and also Facebook, Two Hosers. And twohosers.com is the best place to go to find out everything you need to know, because all the links are on there, even Schwartz Chronicles.
Awesome.
It's on there. AlanAttridge.com, on there. Twitter, on there. Amazon, on there.
Awesome.
You can go and click through our site and go to Amazon and help us out. Help Adam buy another softbox.
Yeah, hopefully at some point, Yang Nuo on there.
Well, you've got some phone calls to make.
Yeah, that's the part I really fall short
maybe
on.
Maybe they'll call you. You don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Just go sit by the phone and hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it, Adam. Already. Finally over.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, 14 hours.
So what that means is, well, we have no time. We're just going to start the next week's episode right now. They just bleed over at this point.
Let's just split this one in three, and then we're covered.
Not going to happen. So that's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.